This is the Revitalize My Church podcast, created to help churches navigate change and reorient to a new and healthy future. This episode is hosted by the Executive Director of Assist Church Expansion, Nathan Bryant, and his ministry colleague, Bart Blair.
Welcome to the Revitalize My Church podcast, episode number 47. I'm Bart Blair, and I am joined by the Director of Assist Church Expansion, Mr. Nathan Bryant. Hello, Nathan.
Hi, Bart.
I'm glad to be on Zoom with you today, and I'm sure that you're glad to be on Zoom with me too.
I am.
Yes. Okay. Now that we got the small talk out of the way, this, you know, we don't do a lot of small talk on this podcast because, to be perfectly honest, I'm not really a small talk kind of guy. In fact, I listen to several podcasts where there's so much small talk at the beginning, I just fast forward through all the small talk. So we're going to cut the chase. No small talk today. This is the 47th episode of our podcast. We're coming up on right at about 2 years since we've been producing this podcast. Our goal is to help churches navigate change and reorient to a new and healthy future. Nathan and I record an episode that is dropped on the first of every month, and then we have an episode that drops on the 15th of every month, which is typically an interview with someone that we're learning from or someone that we're excited about knowing in the church revitalization or church renewal space. Today, Nathan and I are going to do a deep dive on a topic that is near and dear to many church revitalizers' hearts, and that is a topic related to your facility. In fact, I've titled this episode, "Does Your Building Help or Hurt Your Church Revitalization?" What do you think, Nathan? Does your building help or hurt?
It can hurt it.
Yeah. And it can hurt. Help it. It can help it. Yeah.
I think it can do both.
Yeah. Nathan, you and I both are in church planting for the better part of our adult lives. And honestly, we've been in portable churches for most of that time. Yes?
Yes.
So
it's always funny to me. I go to people's churches and they're like, "Oh, we hate this and we hate that." And all the guys I know that don't have a building are like, would die for this property, right? So
I would give anything to have that permanent space that seated 40 people, like, and I'll do 8 services on a Sunday if I have to, but just to not have to set up and tear down and store the equipment one more Sunday. But hey, we digress. That is our experience. Our experience has not been revitalizing a building, but we have been in a lot of church buildings. You've been in a lot over the course of this last year. Some of them older, some of them really, really old, some of them with storage closets to die for. In fact, there's one in particular in mind. I'm not going to name it that you recently visited that I remember when we were there a number of years ago. I was amazed by the number of closets that this church building had and the amount of stuff in these closets. I think they're expecting old printers and old TVs to come back in fashion at some point, or they're in a need for something, because they had all the old TVs from the 1980s and the 1990s. They just couldn't get rid of them. We know that's a problem, but that's not the point of this particular topic. We're going to talk about a few different things. We're going to talk about really how your church facility fits into the overall revitalization process. One of the things I mentioned to you before we started recording is that oftentimes when I'm coaching pastors and churches through revitalization, there tends to be either an overemphasis on the cosmetic aspects of their building or an underemphasis, right? They either don't realize how much their building and its condition is hurting, or they think that if they can just fix these things and paint these things and change these things, that it's going to make all of the difference. And there is kind of a tightrope that we have to walk in here with how much energy needs to go in the building to actually help with the revitalization versus how much not to overemphasize, right? You with me on that?
Yeah, you only have so much money and resources when you're trying to revitalize a church or any church, regardless of what stage it's in. So we can overemphasize the property like it's going to be the some deal of how we're going to grow. But we can also de-emphasize it, or we get too comfortable. I think that's the base that gets me. But my brother and I and Bartley Sawoski lived together and when we were in college. We always had friends over once a week. And the reason why we had friends over once a week was because we didn't clean the place otherwise. And if we never had those friends over, we just wouldn't see the mess. But now that people were actually going to come into their house, we're like, oh, we got to clean this place. So we would clean it up and make it nice. So I think of that when I think of church revitalization, is that sometimes the folks that are in the church have been there for so long, they're comfortable. Well, not necessarily dirty, I wouldn't say that, but they're comfortable with their space and they're not really looking at it like someone who's coming in for the first time and taking a look at it as a host would look at their space. So that's a big part.
Yeah. Now, I'll just make this point once more before we kind of get into some of the key points here. And that is that your facility, your church building is a ministry tool. It's something that God has blessed you with. And it's something that we want to be able to leverage and utilize for reaching lost people and helping people yep. grow in their relationship with Jesus. The building is a thing, but it's not the main thing. Ultimately, yes. changing the culture in your church is what's going to help your church revitalize. But hey, the facility can play a part in that. And so we're going to talk about a few things that can help your church revision, refresh its mission, re-engage the culture, and just to have a healthy balance on the perspective. Now, Nathan, when you started kind of teaching through revitalization, you know, 8 years ago, almost a decade ago, you came yeah. up with this this analogy of kind of inviting neighbors, speaking of inviting neighbors over, inviting people yeah. over, you came up with this analogy of inviting neighbors over to share dessert. Why don't you share that analogy and then we'll kind of lean into how that plays into the facility part itself.
Yeah, well, we talked about, you know, if we're going to have people over, I was talking about because we were coming out of COVID at the time. We hadn't had anybody in the house for a long time. We invited 50 people in the house and we weren't expecting it. And all of a sudden 50 people show up, you know, the house wouldn't be clean enough. Like it'd be like, cause it's a little bit clean for us, but not presentable clean for people showing up to your home. You know, there's stuff and keys on the dining room table and all the mail is on there and everything. There's no place to sit. There's no food hasn't been prepared. You know, you're just not ready for people to come. So the experience that people are going to have when the house isn't clean, there's no setup for what we're going to do, that there's no food ready for them to eat. You know, it's going to be a horrible experience. So you really want to make sure that we clean the house, we set the table, we cook the food, and then we open the door. And that's kind of the idea.
Yeah. You would often use the analogy of baking a cake. We're going to bake yep. the cake. We're going to set the table. We're going to clean the house. And I would say, you know, we had, both of us, we have kids roughly the same age. And there were those yep. seasons where you would come into my house. And I love hosting a small group for the very same reason, because without a small group, there's always a perpetual pile of laundry on the couch that needs to be folded. There were always Legos all over the floor. And the breakfast dishes are probably still on the dining table, right?
Oh, totally.
And so yeah. I yeah. know when we're having people over, we're going to clean all those dishes off of the table. We're going to clean up all the Legos off the floor. We're going to fold the laundry and actually get it off the couch so that there's a place for people to sit so that they feel comfortable, so they don't feel awkward. And then yep. we're going to make sure that that cake is fully baked so that everybody is ready to be served. Now, the way that our facility plays into this this illustration that we're using, it's not about impressing people. It's really about removing any unnecessary barriers that might prevent someone from feeling like they can connect and that they belong, right? Yeah. We have a yeah. tendency sometimes to think about our facility or our building, and it's for us. But when it comes to hospitality and inviting people or expecting people from the outside, there's something to be said about the posture of a church that is actively expecting people who are new to come on a Sunday. Meaning yes. you've got a place for them to sit. You've got good signage and ability for them to find the places that they need to park and the entrance that they need to come into. You were telling me a story one time about a church that you went to visit and you literally could not find the front door. You remember that?
I couldn't find it.
Couldn't find it.
Walked her all the way around the building. There was no right. sign.
And I would say,
I just happened to start at the wrong spot, went the wrong direction. I went all the way around.
Yeah. And, you know, most church buildings, that was a very unique church building, but that's not, you know, maybe not always the case. But hey, sometimes churches have like multiple entrances. If your building has multiple entrances and maybe you use one and you don't use another, or some doors are locked and some aren't, you have guests, hosts at one door and not at another. If people don't know where to go, you got to start at the parking lot. We start on the outside. We're going to set the table. We're going to clean the house, make sure that our parking lot is organized, that parking is obvious where people should park, but the door they're supposed to enter is clear. The space is clean and it's welcoming. And then it communicates that we're expecting guests. My wife and I just spent a week up in Canada visiting family and friends. And there's a couple that we always stay with when we get there. And when we get there, there's always little chocolates on the pillow when we get there. And this tells us that Anne was expecting us, that she was ready for us, and we felt welcomed when we came, right? And there's something to be said about that little detail that you go, these people were ready for us, they were expecting us, and they planned for us. And that's one of the things that when it comes to preparing our building, we just want to make sure that it communicates to newcomers that we were expecting you and we have a place for you.
Yeah. And also, it you know, they say first impressions aren't everything, but they sure mean a lot for lots of people. And especially young families and young moms with their kids and babies, they want a clean environment. And that's a big deal for them, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about budget a little bit. You know, you mentioned even early on that sometimes churches don't have a whole lot of money to spend on facility updates and that sort of thing. What are some things that you can think of that a church could do to update or prepare for guests that would cost little or no money? Can you think of any things?
The biggest thing I can think of from most churches that I go to visit is because the church has the ability, the church has been shrinking and the facility has been used less and less and less and less and less. You have all these rooms that now become storage containers. and also things that haven't been moved or nothing's been updated. So they have the same bulletin board that's been up there since 1995. And there was nothing wrong with the bulletin board, but it was put up in 19, it is dust. Like some of the pictures are not like, so just simple stuff like decluttering and updating stuff that could be done. Paint is relatively cheap, takes a little elbow grease, but you know, vacuuming and cleaning and organizing and brightening things up, just simple stuff like that can really make a huge difference to the property.
Yeah, I would say decluttering is number one on the list. It doesn't cost anything other than time.
Yep.
And I think that like I could literally probably go into any of the church partnerships that we're working with, any of the churches, and the pastors know it because we have the conversations many, many times. And sometimes it's a matter of, we just don't know if we actually have permission to get rid of some of these things.
Totally.
We don't know, like one church that we're working with that had a room that was full of costumes from Christmas pageants that had been done for years and years in the church. Yeah. But it had been decades probably since the church had done one. Meanwhile, there was a room that really could be used as a classroom or as an office space that was completely full of the costumes. And, you know, we had to kind of go through a process of sort of getting permission from some of the longtime established members of the church to go, we were probably not going to use these costumes again. We're not going to use these 25, 30-year-old plastic Christmas trees again for the Christmas pageant. Could we actually donate these to a local community theater or to a school that might want to put them in their costume or their wardrobe room and clean out the room so that we can actually use it for other things? And believe it or not, the old guard actually consented and said, yes, we can we can do that. And so it took a little bit of courage to go and make the ask, but in the end, it actually cleaned up a whole room and created some space in the church building that you know wasn't there before. I think, you know, a lot of times, Nathan, this is meant with all due respect and not meant to be a critical statement at all. But a lot of times the generation of people that are living in these churches are older, baby boomers or sometimes older. And they did not grow up as we did or as our kids did in a disposable generation where like here's the deal. I've got a printer in my office that I cannot get a driver for my new MacBook to work with. So this printer has basically become a disposable printer. It's going to go in the trash and I'm going to go buy a new one. There's a generation of people that have held on to everything because their generation didn't get rid of anything. So we have old televisions. Yep. We have old electronic equipment. We have, I've been in churches that still have the old overhead projectors in a room somewhere as if one of these we might
have
the overhead projector again.
File folders of acetates and stuff in there.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a delicate dance that you have to do to start prioritizing the decluttering of the property. I have churches that I've gone into that literally have an entire room filled with nothing but plastic flowers and plants that become part of the church's decor rotation, right? Okay. And so we have we have a set for every single month. Meanwhile, we have an entire room that is being utilized by plastic plants. We have to start asking ourselves the question about what the ROI is on holding on to those things versus what we might be losing with not being able to leverage that space or use it for other things. But decluttering, I think, is a big deal.
I think one thing I'd also add to this part is that when you start to make the changes, especially if you, people know that it's happening and they're all participating, I encourage guys to make work days and get everybody hands on. And so not only getting permission to do stuff, but getting people actively involved. And when you start making those changes in your church, you start cleaning it up, you start painting it, refreshing it, they start taking pride and get excited about the change themselves. And so it's a, it can be a real boost to the congregation just to make some of those changes.
Yeah, 100%. A good fresh coat of paint can really make a big deal. Now, fair warning that choosing the color of the paint might actually be a battle. We've seen that happen before. So the color of the paint could be a big deal, but just tread lightly on that. But a good fresh coat of paint can be a really big deal. Yeah. Now, you mentioned a few minutes ago, first impressions. First impressions are really important. Let's talk a little bit about curb appeal to the property itself. Statistics would actually tell us that a first-time guest actually begins forming an opinion about whether or not they're going to return before they've actually even experienced the worship service. Sometimes that's related to the people engagement that they have or don't have, but a lot of times it's to the property and the building that they're going into. Why don't you speak a little bit to that?
Yeah, I would say it's not even just thinking about the first-time guest coming on a Sunday morning. You might be having activities and programs through the week on the property or in the building, and that's getting them wonderful to get people to connect with it. But if they come into your building and they think, oh, they're not coming back. They're not going to come to your search service, you know? It's kind of like going to a really nice restaurant and you see the bathroom. You're like, oh, what's the kitchen look like? I don't want to eat the food now. So, you know, it's good. It's stuff like that. So, I mean, whether we like it or not, it does speak to us. And there are some people who can be put off, you know, hypersensitively. But the average person wants to be in a space that they feel comfortable in and that is clean and well cared for. And when it's not, it really communicates something to them about the church. And we want to take that away from being a barrier for them to consider being part of the church community.
If your church building is in a location where you get a lot of drive-by traffic, then your curb appeal matters a lot. So the way that you manage the lawn, the landscaping, signage, exterior lighting, all of those things send a message. And here's what I would do if I were leading a church that's going through revitalization. I'd drive around and look at all of the yards of all of the people in my church, and I'd find the people who have the best yard, and I'd ask them if they would own the yard for our church property. Again, sometimes you have to make an investment financially. There might be some upgrades to some landscaping things that you need to do. Maybe there's some upgrades to signage that you might need to do. But doing those little things really can kind of change people's first impressions. You know, we talked a little bit about signage on the outside. Can people actually find where they're supposed to park? And is it obvious where they're supposed to enter the building? Sometimes you can do that with temporary signage that you just put out on Sundays. Sometimes it might need to be permanent signage that actually goes on the property. You can kind of make a decision. Low-cost options are like sandwich boards or flags or things that you can put out that make it obvious for people where they're supposed to go. And sometimes just putting things out like mulch or potted plants, having fresh light bulbs in the fixtures outside, make sure that they're all working and that they're all, you know, that they're all modern, and just a clean walkway, right? Just making sure that we're
clutter-free. Yeah, when things look old and tired, right? It's interesting to me. I'm not an aesthetic person, so I miss a lot of stuff. Like when you and I go to the place, you're like seeing all this stuff. And my wife and my kids are the same because they're more aesthetically oriented. They can like, oh, this is old. This is that. I mean, they have all these comments about this stuff. And I'm like, I don't even notice any of that. And so, you know, there's certain things I do notice, but it takes quite a bit to bump me off. Like I'm into the idea space. But, you know, I can really make a big impression on people, you know, but if there's life and there's energy and it's bright and it's clean and it's warm, it's like, it's a place inviting for them, but they want to come. They want to see what's happening. There's a life happening here. There's something going on here. If it looks tired and uncared for and unkept, it's not inviting. It's off-putting for people.
Yeah. One of my favorite great first impressions, I love to do this, don't do it all the time, but I'll do it from time to time, is I'll go down to the grocery store on a Sunday morning just an hour or so before the service, and I'll buy a dozen balloons, and I'll put balloons outside on my signs. Because I think nothing says we're expecting new visitors or new guests and that there's something happening here other than balloons. It just gets attention. Yeah. Even do it on Mother's Day, do it on Father's Day, do it on your fall kickoff, do it.
There's something happening there. Right?
Something happening there. Yeah. Just put some balloons out, man. Balloons signify a party, and we're here to party for Jesus, right? Party in Jesus's name. So I like balloons. Now, we've gone from the kind of the inside to the outside. Let's go back inside. You mentioned restaurants and restrooms. Okay. In a restaurant can make a big difference, but I believe that restrooms in our church facilities can also make a big difference. Do you have an opinion on that?
Especially young mothers with kids. I mean, you know, I grew up in the country and I'm not pretentious, but the more you get to an urban and a suburban environment, people have a much higher standard of what they're looking for and what they feel safe and comfortable with, that they don't get the ick. And they don't want their kid around something that's going to give them the ick. So, you know, it seems so simple and so basic, but it's a big deal. And it makes a big difference in terms of person's value and even wanting to come back to the facility, right? So,
yeah, I think this to me is, this to me is actually something that probably needs to be elevated above a lot of the other modernizations or renovations that need to have in church space. Like I'll talk to a lot of pastors that are like, well, you know, we want to change from a projector screen to put TVs up in the sanctuary to project the screens and the text from the sermons and stuff on it, or we want to upgrade our sound systems and things like that. And I look at those things and I'm like, if what you have there is functional and it's not, you know, and it's not glitchy and it works on Sunday, leave it.
Yeah.
Go and update the bathrooms. And when I say update, we're not just talking about clean, but we're talking about modernizing. Modernize your restrooms. You know, I went into one restroom in one church and there were literally like six different containers of hand wash pump, the little hand wash pumps on the counter. I'm like, I don't know why there's so many. And then instead of having paper towel dispenser on the wall, you've just got a roll of paper towels on the back of the sink with all the little things. Just think through, you know, go to a place that has, I spend a lot of time in airports, right? I fly a lot. You go into certain airports in their restrooms and you're like, oh, this is a pleasure to hang out with. I have the American Airlines Admirals Club membership. So I can go.
Okay, wow. That's awesome.
I can go into the American Airlines Admirals Club, and it's a much better restroom or washroom experience, depending on whether you're Canadian or American. It's a much better restroom experience in the Admirals Club because they've thought through everything, right? It's clean, it's modern. It doesn't look like it was a mistake from the 1970s, right? And I think it says so much. You know, I reflect on this often. I remember way back in the day when you and I were both at Grace Community Church in Ontario together, and we were meeting in the Grace Center, and we shared our building with a school.
Yes.
our restrooms in that season, because our restrooms were used by elementary school age kids all during the week. They were terrible. And if there was anything that we could go back and do again in that building, I'm like, we should have done more in the restrooms because they weren't awesome. But you're right. Young moms, young parents, restrooms do matter. And, you know, I think less is more in the restroom. Here's another hint. For those of you who are thinking about painting, I've been on a couple of conversations with churches. Your restroom needs to be painted with light colors, not dark colors. Restrooms should not be a dark cavern kind of experience. It needs to be bright and fresh and clean and modern looking. And it's just so go into some spaces, some places that have modern updated restrooms, and just do the same thing. Just copy what they've done. But I would say
my wife will go buy 7 gas stations because she refuses to use that washer. So, you know, we have to go find a Chick-fil-A because Chick-fil-A keeps their bathrooms really nice.
Chick-fil-A and Buc-ee's, right? You got a Chick-fil-A and a Buc-ee's.
Exactly.
I've got a friend who told me recently that when he and his wife travel, if they're on road trips, they will only stop and use restrooms in hotel lobbies. So they'll find a hotel because the hotel lobby usually has a clean, updated restroom more so than the gas station.
That's a nice hotel.
McDonald's. So anyway, I don't mean to beat the horse on this, the dead horse already, but not just clean, modern matters, and smell matters. Okay. So
I've gone to so many bathrooms where the drainage isn't right and it just smells putrid in there because it's not being drained properly. There's not an air gap that protects from that back air coming out of the sewer system. Like the bathroom looked amazing, but I couldn't get past the odor, right? So yeah. Yes. Okay. Yes.
All right. We managed to get through all of that without any rude jokes too. We talked about bathroom. So we'll move on. Okay. The fifth point here is that we really, when it comes to decor in our facility, we want to choose decor that reflects the future of the church, not the past of the church.
Yeah.
And this is something that a lot of churches that are going through a season of renewal or revitalization will really struggle with, because your guests are able to, they read into who you are and what you stand for based on the way that you decorate the building. Time capsules. That's really what a lot of our church buildings are. They're time capsules to some heyday in the past of the church. You want to speak to that a little bit?
Well, that's very common. And also it's the comfortable space, right? That's what I was saying before.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people, this is their home. They're very comfortable with it. They've had that picture on the wall for 25 years. And like, do we need to change it? You know? So they're not perceiving it as a new person coming in. It's more like a home for them, and they feel very safe with it. There's nothing necessarily wrong with what you have for decor per se, but we need to be thinking about, how does a new person feel when they walk into this space, and how does it engage them to want to continue to be here and to think this is a place for them? And that's part of the thing I think you need to be thinking about. Who are the people we're trying to attract? Who are the people we're trying to connect with? And does this space make them feel like they could connect with us if they come in it? It's a big idea.
I'm going to say a couple of things that are going to sound really harsh, and I don't mean them to be harsh. I really mean them with all due respect and love and sincerity. But nothing dates your facility faster than decor that belongs in your grandmother's living room, or that actually came from someone's deceased grandmother's living room, which, when we go into church buildings, a lot of the furniture that we see is furniture that came from someone's house when they died. I can't tell you, like, it's a lot. Entire furniture sets, living room sets, bedroom sets that end up in the church building. And at some point, someone thought that it would look good there, but now you go in and all you're doing is flashing back to 1977 or 1987, and it just doesn't look good. We got one pastor we were working with who basically said, our lobby looks like a funeral home because the furniture in it looks like it came out of a funeral home. And it might have actually come out of a funeral home. And so we need to, you know, here's what I'd challenge you to do. Go to Ashley Furniture or go to IKEA, look at the way people are decorating their homes, and then look at your property and examine the contrast between what the people we're trying to reach see as modern and decorative versus what the generations past did. And we have to be really, I mean, sometimes it's we're going to have to go on a limb here sometimes to get rid of some things that we might need to get rid of. I was in a church building one time that I was in a meeting room, and there were literally like five or six couches around this it was a very large meeting room. It wasn't quite a fellowship hall, but it was something similar to that. Five or six couches. Not one of those couches was less than 30 or 40 years old. And I'm like, you know, I'm like, okay, that might be fine for the student ministry room if you want to have a couch in the youth group room, but it's probably not appropriate, or it's just not sending the right messaging to new people that are coming to your church when you have old, outdated, broken down, donated furniture.
The thing I would encourage people to do, if you're someone like me, if you're just, you know, you're thinking more on the bigger picture ideas, and you're working on your messages and what you're going to preach on and speak on and what your outreach strategies are going to be, and this kind of stuff really kind of evades you, I encourage you to go find two or three young couples that are in the demographic you're trying to reach, and get them to consider doing an evaluation of these kinds of things in your church and giving you their opinion. Because you're going to look at it from your eyes. The people that are already in the church are going to look at it from their eyes. But you really want to kind of have someone who's looking at it from the demographic you're trying to reach. And I would just encourage you to consider that as you're navigating this space, not trying to spend a lot of money, not changing everything there is to change, but just have a different look at what is your space communicating and how does it feel for someone who you're trying to connect with.
Yeah. I'm going to carry that on in our next point, but I have a couple of other things that I just want to kind of hit on here as it relates to a decor that reflects your future, not your past. Yep. This is another hard conversation, and that is it's the doily conversation. Doilies and floral prints, okay? So again, it's a generational thing. We get these little frilly doily things that somebody made and somebody bought, and we get floral things all around the building. And again, they often make the building look much more dated. Someone's intention was to make it pretty. But pretty yes. to one person is dated to someone else. And so sometimes we have to have, I mean, the doily is really kind of a metaphor for a lot of other things that might be holding the church back, which is it's just a generational thing. And then again, some of these things are going to require some very delicate and sensitive conversations as you kind of try to move the church from the past to the present to the future. You mentioned like photos on the wall. Here's one of the things that I encourage churches to do. A lot of the older churches that we work with will have like a missionary corner on the wall where they have photos of missionaries past, present, and future. A lot of times it's mostly missionaries from the past. Instead of having old photos on the wall, take the photos down, digitize those photos, put a TV screen on the wall, and put a slideshow on. So you're using a modern technology to honor your missionaries past and present. I was at a church recently that is having an anniversary celebration this summer. And I was with the vision team, and we were talking about creating some ways to bring out some old photos and to celebrate the history of the church as we're getting ready to relaunch this church this fall. And one of the gals on the vision team was like, well, we should take some of those old photos and they should be hanging on the walls. Why aren't they hanging on the walls? And her it was a sincere request, right?
Yeah.
But we're talking about pictures from the 1970s and the 1980s, which really don't need to be on the walls. Now, they do need to be somewhere. So we're going to find a way and find a place that we can, you know, honor the past without worshiping the past. And, you know, those are some things that, again, as you look through your space, you look through your facility, are there ways that we can take what we're trying to do and do it in a more modern way with video screens or through a web page on our website or something that gives us the ability to honor the past without living in the past and updating the facility? So I probably camped on this too much.
Two more things I'd say to that real quick, Bartley, is I've seen churches do two things, which I thought was kind of cool. One is they gave one room to the older generation and let them decorate it however they wanted to. And that let them have that space that they could have, which I thought was really cool because that was where the Sunday school classroom was and they met there. And I thought that was really cool. The second thing I thought was a cool idea was they had an honor wall. And it wasn't one who walked in. It was kind of off to the side, but there was a certain place where they had all the pictures of the history of the church from its inception to its current, and it allowed to have some of that history in there. And the older pictures were there, but they're all telling a story about how the church came to be today. And I thought that was really kind of a creative way to do that, and really awesome, and I think of interest for a lot of people knowing what the church is about. And still allowing some of that to be there. So there's ways, I think, to have some of that in the church in honoring people and encouraging them, but still trying to figure out how do we make this space something that's inviting and warm to the people we're trying to target.
Yeah, I've seen churches do some pretty creative things with telling the history and the story of the church. But most of the time, if they're going to do it well and they're going to do it in a modern way, we're going to have to take the photographs out of the frame from 1967, and we're going to have to digitize it, and we're going to have to create some way. Like I was in one church building here in the Dallas area. The church dates back to like the 1960s, and they have this room. It's kind of like their meeting room for their small group leaders or something of that nature. And they had created kind of this mural on the wall, and it was like a digital printed mural, and it had sort of the history and all the photos from the past and everything. And so it had the old historical photos. It was celebrating the past, but it was doing it in a modern way. And so it did a lot to kind of bring you into the whole church's story without having literally 40, 50, 60-year-old photos on the wall that if you remove them from the wall, that's another reason to paint the wall. I got white squares behind the yellowing walls. Last point that we're going to hit on, and I wanted to carry on something that you were talking about just a moment ago, which was bringing people from your target demographic, younger couples or younger people into the church. The children's ministry space is one that also really, really matters. Even if you currently have no children, let's rewind to the very beginning of the conversation, which was when we're expecting new guests, we roll out the red carpet, we do the things that say we were expecting you. And we're working with churches that have not had kids in their children's ministry for sometimes many, many years. And it's obvious when you go into their children's ministry spaces because the equipment, the nursery equipment, the cribs, the toys are all old and dated, many of which probably wouldn't pass health and safety tests in 2026 at the time that we're recording this episode. So I think that's another area. We've got one church that we work with that literally they got a small donation to the church. And the first thing they did was, we're going to update one restroom and we're going to update our children's ministry space, because they knew that those two things were going to be a hindrance to younger families coming and attend the church. And guess what? Shortly after they renovated, they had some families that had visited the church, and they were proud to be able to show the children's ministry space.
Totally.
Because it had been all updated and was clean and it looked great.
Yeah. And I would have some kind of symbol or signal on the outside that tell them that the children are welcome here, a playground or whatever is going, like something that you want to make sure that you know, that young families know that this is a place for them and that their kids are going to have a great time and be safe in their space.
Yeah, and we're not talking about, there are churches that have like Disney-like experiences for their kids. We're not talking about that, but we're talking about clean and safe and intentional and modern. And sometimes in the modern mindset, less is more. The less you have in the room, the better. Some churches, we had a guest on our show last year that talked about sensory rooms for children with special needs or even adults with special needs. That's another area that you can really kind of focus on if that's an area of ministry that you want to be able to help out with, is having sensory rooms. And again, a lot of times those sensory rooms, having less is more, having that space that's just kind of clear and quiet, having a space where moms can nurse babies if they have them, or a space where children can just sit on the floor and play with some simple toys, or a space that you can actually deliver a children's ministry lesson with some table and chairs and a video screen. You don't need a whole lot more in those rooms, but they do need to look like we're paying attention to the fact that it's 2026, it's not 1986, and we're going to think about the community that we're trying to reach.
And I will say this from my wife, because she loves kids, is it needs to be fun. For my wife, when she comes with her kids or she's thinking about children, she's like, this space needs to be fun. And it needs to show that you want kids to be there. You want them to have a great experience, and you're excited and expecting them to come. Yeah, for sure.
When your kids were little, did your wife like to take them to the rainforest cafes? You ever been to one of those?
She would take them to that.
Would be like the space she would love, because it's like it's all about the experience.
Absolutely.
Well, let's put a pin in this episode, Nathan. I think we hit on a lot of things. I actually have a few more bullet points. Maybe we'll save them for another episode, another day. I do want to mention that at the time that this podcast episode is being released, Nathan and I, we have a new book coming out called The Five Big Rocks of Church Revitalization. It's going to be available on Amazon in the middle of June. I believe it's July 15th is going to be the release date of that. We're going to be at the Charis Fellowship National Conference this summer in July, and we'll have copies of that book available. So if you're interested, you can click over to our website, revitalizemy.church, or you can go to Amazon on July 15th or later, and you can search for The Five Big Rocks of Church Revitalization. You can buy a copy of our book and hopefully learn a few things that maybe we've skipped on the podcast. We've covered most of it in the podcast. we hope that it'll be a helpful resource for you, for your leadership team, to kind of give you some direction in terms of having your church move towards a new and healthy future. Anything else that you want to add for today's episode, Nathan?
No, I would say this issue of the property is a big one. And sometimes we're going to need help too to do it, because some guys are not oriented this way. You know, maybe your wife will be, which was awesome, but you need to get some help. And don't try to do this with a lot of money. Think about how we can make a big difference, a big impact with as little resources as we have to do it. It'll make a big difference, not just for reaching new people, but also encouraging your people and motivating them to see that something is happening, change is happening, and new things are taking place. It'll energize your people when you start to just push into the property a little bit.
Well said. I appreciate that. This has been episode 47 of the Revitalize My Church podcast. Thanks for sticking it all the way out to the end here. Just a reminder that if you haven't yet subscribed to our podcast, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, be sure that you do that so that you don't miss any future episodes. And if you found this episode to be helpful for you, would you please share it with someone that you know who might also find it to be helpful? Until the next time, I'm Bart Blair. And on behalf of Nathan Bryant, we'll see you next time.